This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself? Like you were hiding behind a mask? BetterHelp Online Therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
What is up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that have come out this week. And there are a ton of them.
Finally,
so why don't we get right in it and talk about Mystique, number one from Marvel Comics, written and drawn by Declan Shalvey. The goal here with this book is to bring Mystique back to a place where she's got a little bit of that mystique. And you don't know if she's good or evil.
Oh,
she's on a mission. We don't know exactly why or exactly what she wants. And meanwhile, Nick Fury Jr., very specific about the Jr. in this issue, is trying to track her down because he notices she's doing some weird stuff. I'll just say this up front. I love this issue. I was pretty hyped for it anyway because I really like what Declan Shalvey has been doing. But in particular, I feel like the skills that he used on Old Dog, another fantastic spy book, he took those, translated them to Marvel, and just amped it up to 1,000. Everything that happens in here looks great, moves great. It makes you question absolutely everything, exactly like the best spy stuff should. You're like, is that Mystique? Is that Mystique? Who's over there? What's going on? It's so much fun to read. Loved it from front to back.
Yeah, I mean, I loved this so much. I was like, why didn't Marvel turn this into a TV show? Because I could watch episode after episode of these two kind of spies individually, but then also going up against each other. Mystique versus Fury is a glorious idea and handled in such a great way in this comic. This is a ton of fun. Two shapeshifters going at it, trying to figure out who's telling the truth, who's lying, who's really who and who's not. I mean, this is such a great idea. So well executed. Love the art. Love the pace of this. This is just such a fun whodunit. What's going on? Whose side am I on? This is awesome.
I also love Nick Fury's new status quo in here. To be honest, I don't remember what happened to S.H.I.E.L.D. that put them in this situation, but they're much more typical like FBI pencil pushers at this point.
I hate to break it to you, but Coulson died and then all the carriers went down and then there was that part
that
where...
That was the MCU. That was the MCU, man. Whatever it is that brought them to this place, I think it's a great place to put them where they don't have the resources anymore. They don't have the helicarriers or anything like that. So Mystique can jump all over the world somehow at a moment's notice. Meanwhile, Nick Fury is very limited in terms of what he can do. So like you're saying, seeing these two opposing forces on a collision course is a lot of fun. I'm really excited about this. And I love the back matter, the note that Declan wrote in the back where he talks about, I didn't want to take this on. There was already an amazing Mystique series. What could I possibly add to it? And what he realized is he could add in from his artistic perspective and have fun there and really push the shapeshifter angle. And I think he crushed it. This is a great book. This is a must pick up. And you don't need to pick up anything else. This is not connected to anything else. It's just a great, great book.
Hey, something I wanted to talk about is... Alex, you curate a fun stack. You know, I don't know if people follow and read along, but when I saw this was the first one, I got hype. I was like, Alex, way to go, dude. Great pull right off the top. Like, let's go.
Thanks. You usually hate whatever I put first, so I appreciate that.
It seemed like you were like, hey, this time I'm going to go with a good comic first, you know?
No, this is what I was excited about. And I know people like Mystique. I was really curious to check it out. Not to pull back the curtain too much, but mostly the way that I put it is like trying to game out what people are interested in hearing about the most and putting those up front versus what I personally like, but happily this jibed together this time. Let's talk about a big issue that I'm really curious to get into, and I'm going to put a spoiler warning here before we even get into it, even though DC has already spoiled all the stuff. Wonder Woman number 14 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Samperi. Geez. This is a huge issue in terms of an extra page count. There is no backup story in this one. This is the kickoff of DC All In for Wonder Woman. And I will also say, even though this is a heartbreaking issue, this is a phenomenal one as well.
That Get your tissues ready, bro. This one got me. I was bawling my eyes out over here. This was beautiful. It was powerful. It was amazing. The title got me pissed off right from jump. And I was like, how dare you? But this I was just so moved and blown away. The title is, What is the Point of Steve Trevor? Are you effing kidding me? They answer that question very well in this.
Yes.
But
This is what I thought was amazing about this. And Tom King does this in the best of his comics. But this is like watching a really good high wire act where there's all these different things that he needs to juggle at the same time while poking a bear, but not actually pissing people off. And he does all of that while also providing an emotional story that has a fascinating structure to it. Daniel Samperi's art is always next level, so enough can't be said about it. But to get into the story a little bit, and this is the spoiler, but again, they put that out there in the preview pages. Steve Trevor dies in this issue, and this is all about Wonder Woman dealing with it, leading up to the birth of Trinity and how that happens. And it is, per the title, like the poke of the bear part is, this is a response to fans who asked that question, being like, Steve Trevor's just a regular guy. Why does Wonder Woman date him? Why does she date Superman?
But that's the beauty of
Batman? Yes.
I think there is something about, you know, love. And from an outside perspective, people try to rank people and put them together like, oh, if you're a superhero, you have to be with the super. You know, it just says something about somebody's character that they're open to love in different sizes and forms. And I think this couple really does a great job of showcasing that. And it's a beautiful relationship and so well kind of like taken care of in this issue and communicated Wonder Woman's thoughts and kind of feelings in such a powerful and unique way that like you just wouldn't get if it was like, you know, Batman or whatever. You know what I mean? Like the fact that love is fragile and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I just think it was just so well executed in this book. And just super impressed by this comic. Like,
The other part to throw out there in terms of the high wire act thing is the 14th.
Stop pushing your high wire agenda. All right.
I mean, circus tickets to sell, Pete. They're not going to sell themselves, all right? This is the 14th issue of an ongoing story that is very intricate that they've been laying out since the first issue of this series, but they have to make it work for DC All In, which is to make it new reader-friendly at the same time, and they do it.
It's a great jumping-on point. You can pick up this issue.
Which is crazy. It shouldn't be. There's no reason it should be, but it absolutely is. It resets Wonder Woman's status quo. It gives you all the information you need to know about the situation in the issue at the same time as it's still rewarding if you've been reading the previous 13 issues. Very, very impressive from front to back. And not to be glowing praise for everything in the stack, but...
Wait.
Oh, you had something else to say about
this. I just wanted to say, like, you know, because there's this thing about, like, it happens in comics, right? There are these kind of ebbs and flows in relationships, you know, Lois and Clark go through stuff, you know, there's just some, you know, Spider-Man and MJ, but I don't know. I just feel that, like, I'm really sad that this relationship is over, but I'm also so happy it was handled in such a great way that it's like, it makes it easier to kind of like be open to change later, if that makes sense.
You hate seeing it leave, but you love watching it go.
You have to ruin everything. Speaking of which, let's move on.
The Exorcism at 1600 Penn, number one from IDW, written by Hatta Rosemay, art by Vanessa Del Rey, per the title. This is basically The Exorcist, but in the White House. The idea is the first female president is elected, and she moves in with her family, so she's trying to balance being there for their family while also being the leader of the free world. This isn't a surprise to her kids or anything like that, but she does have a what do you call it, blended family, when two families come together? Is that what it is?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
So there's two different kids from two different marriages. They get together. So they're all from very different backgrounds, but they are on different paths, particularly the kids, as they go to a private school. Some of them are using their position as a child of the president. Others are slowly going apart, falling apart and going insane. I thought this was fantastic, absolutely terrifying, which is exactly what you want from a horror comic. It is also, since I know everybody's persnickety about politics right now, it is political without being too pointed about our current situation, which I appreciated. It isn't the sort of thing that I picked up and I felt like, oh my God, I got away from social media for 3 seconds and now I'm right back in it. It has stuff to say about politics. It has stuff to say about what the first female president would go through, but it's not explicitly about that. So great across the board. And I know we always judge our horror comics by this, but Vanessa Del Rey draws some great jump scares in here, which is so hard to do. Really well done. Pete, you hate horror stuff.
I do hate horror stuff. So this was hard for me. Also because, like, when you have a premise like this, I'm like, all right, let's get to it. You know, because it's like, yeah, okay, interesting family. I don't really care about them. I want to get to the thing that I'm scared of. When is it going to jump out at me? So I didn't have as much patience as I normally would for a comic because I'm worried about the jump scare coming. You know what I mean? So I was like, yada, 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 family, yada, 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 yada. Come on, when are we getting, you know, so.
See, that really worked for me here because you get to know and care about these characters. And I know we talk about this a lot, but it's not like it's a last page reveal so much as a slow burn.
Yeah, it's a slow burn. And I was impatient.
Something weird pops up and you're like, what was that? Wait, was that something in the shadows? What is that over there? And then 5 pages later, you're like, oh no. Oh, what's happening? What's happening? So it isn't like 40 pages of a family hanging out and suddenly like might be demons. I don't know. You know, something is very wrong in the White House.
Yeah. They do a great job artistically kind of setting that up, that tone and everything. It's a creepy art style for sure. That really is.
No, essential. But I get it. You don't like the stuff. So you're like, got to drive through it as quickly as possible. Yeah. It's like when you're driving at night on a highway and there's no lights and the next exit is like 10 miles away. You're like, time to go 90 miles per hour, just in case.
So, it's a good thing you don't drive much, man, because it sounds like you're reckless behind the wheel, bro. Yeah.
I don't know. You get nervous, like if you're driving in the woods and that's one of the things, like no exits and there's nobody on the road and no lights. And
I love it when I'm the only one out there. You kidding me?
Nah, I get scared.
It's like, I don't have to worry about hitting anybody, you know?
Leatherface is going to come after me in like a speed tractor or something like that. I don't know.
The old speed tractor, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
All right, here's another big one, or big two, actually. Radiant Black, number 30 from Image Comics, and 30.5 by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, with art by Marcelo Costa and Eduardo Ferragato. This is the end of the Catalyst War, which they've been fighting for many issues that split off into two timelines. Here, this is basically part one and part two of the finale, though it wraps everything up. So it's not really showing those two timelines anymore. But how'd you feel about the speed? How'd you feel about how everything wrapped up at the end?
This is the future of comics. I love this so much. Like, they did such a great job of, like, I didn't have to wait a month or a week or whatever. You know what I mean? You gave me 30 and then 30.5 and, what a great kind of... I mean, this was epic and badass and so fantastic. Things tied in, the escalation of action, and you're just kind of like at the end of 30, you're like, oh, shit. And then they deliver on 30.5, and it's just such a great experience as a reader because we're used to this, like, start and stop. And I know that's a big thing for why people wait for the graphic novel and stuff like that. But like,
I was going to say, you might want to check out books because they got this whole thing where you're after one chapter, you're like, oh shit, what's going to happen next? There's another chapter.
I still like the single issue, asshole. Okay. So no, this was fun and a cool way to do it where you're having these kind of different stories, weaving in and out. Just so impressive. I mean, the scheduling of this and artistically that what they pulled off here, but man, this was a total blast, and we talk about this all the time. So if you're not checking out Radiant Black, like, what are you doing?
This was a fantastic end to the storyline. But I will say, and they get to this at the end here, I'm looking forward to some simpler storylines going forward. This was incredibly complex. I am so impressed they pulled this off in the way that they did. But we very much got away from that I'm a regular guy with some powers, invincible type feel we had in the first couple of issues. And it looks like we're getting back there at least for a little bit, like a back to basics approach.
It started like that. They decided to do a fun,
for
really,
sure.
Yeah. Why are you mad at it, man? This is cool.
I'm not mad. I'm just saying I'm looking forward to back to basics. That's all. I'm saying I like this book and I'm looking forward to the next issue.
Why can't they have like big fun events?
They can't because I hate it. That's what you're getting from what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Great. Moon Knight, Fist of Khonshu, number one from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio. This is, I want to say, the third number one from the same exact team on Moon Knight, but Mark Spector is back in the costume, and he's dealing with a new drug plague on the streets of New York City, which is literal fairy dust. Pete, you're the big Moon Knight guy. How'd you feel about this?
Yeah, listen, Moon Knight is back, and he's taking a stand on glitter. He's like, you get your glitter off my streets, you know? And, you know, good for him. I mean, that stuff is hard to get out of your hair, your hands. I mean, that stuff
just... wasn't this an urban legend that they made glitter once, and like 40 years ago, and it's just been sitting in a bunch of silos, and all the glitter in the world just comes from that one?
We really sidetracked fast on this one. Yeah, I mean, I thought this was a fun kind of Moon Knight thing. I feel like they're setting things up in an interesting point. I mean, the main part is Moon Knight's back and he's, you know, taking a stance on drugs. So great. You know what I mean? Like, let's clean up the streets, I guess.
I really like this, honestly. Like, I like the last... I know I was being a little glib there in terms of them constantly rebooting this title with new number ones, even though...
It seemed like you were glibbing the fuck out.
I was glib. But I enjoyed this. I thought this was a good basic Moon Knight story. Like we're saying, him versus drug dealers. There's no moon gods. There's no change up of structure like there was in the last series or anything like that. It's just a nice, simple, straightforward.
Yeah, you love this. Back to basics, just kind of like, all right, let's start a simple story, you know? Mm-hmm.
I wish it was more complicated. I wish there was some sort of catalyst war going on.
A
thing that I hate.
Yeah.
I don't. I liked it.
You were super
clear. Anyway, this is a good
that.
Book. This continues to be a solid team. If
great
you like
team.
Moon Knight, you will continue to like Moon Knight. Batman and Robin, year
there
one, number one from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Chris Sabney. Per the title, this is Robin Dick Grayson. After his parents have died, he's in the costume. We're not seeing an origin story here, but it is Batman and Robin in the early days figuring out how to work with each other. This team doesn't miss, and they continue not to miss. That's my review of this book.
Wow. Good review. Okay, so first off, I mean, that Chris Samney cover is just so badass and fantastic. I mean, this is glorious. So shouts out to the Samney art. It is so cool and fits really well with the story. Here's the thing, though. Okay?
Oh, boy. Uh-oh.
This is stressful to read because... Robin is young and reckless, and Batman's like, yeah, let's just bring you in and have you start fighting crime. It's stressful. Even the commish was like, yo, Bats, what are you doing, bro? Like, you think this is a good idea? So the stress of that, and I know things don't go well for Robin, so I'm, you know, I think this is a great idea, very well executed, but it's also mad stressful.
I hear that, and I think that is effectively done on the part of the team. I love so many things about this. I mean, that is, like you're talking about on this cover, for anybody who's listening to the podcast version, they have such a delineation between Batman living in the shadows and Robin living in the light. The way that Chris Samney draws the two characters is absolutely perfect. I think my preference is a little bit for Robin, just because Chris Samney brings that cartoonish brightness to everything that he does, and it really comes through in the character. But this is also a softer Batman than we've seen in a really long time.
Yeah.
He is not doing what he usually does with Damian Wayne, where he's like, Damian, go train. I have to go take care of the city. This is him being like, all right, we've already agreed that Batman and Robin is a thing. How do I make this work? How do I treat this kid as his de facto father versus his teacher? How do I balance it there? And I love that. I love that mode for Batman. It's very different than we've seen before. Robin jumping into things, but also being able, I thought was really nice as well, that it wasn't the mode of like, oop, I keep making mistakes, I'm a dumb kid. It's he's good at what he does, and Batman respects him, so you understand.
Yeah, but why he's also like,
well, they both have to learn. That's the whole point, is they both have to learn how to work with each other and how to work individually as well. And that's such a great mode to put them in. There's also a new villain who shows up here that I think is neat and exciting. So yeah, another great book across the board. I love comics, Pete.
That's good. I'm glad you should host the show.
Where Monsters Lie, cul-de-sac number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is a sequel series to Where Monsters Lie, which was about a gated community where slashers from basically different films went between killing sprees. And
they got to live somewhere, too. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Very funny, but also very dark and bloody in that first series, focusing on a FBI agent who was the survivor of a previous murder spree who decides he's going to go arrest slash kill the slashers. Things don't turn out that way. And now we're getting a bigger mythology play with a lot of new communities and a lot of new slashers. This is, I would say, funnier than the first series, even. It really leads to the comedy in this issue, which is great because it also gets darker and more upsetting at the same time. Yeah. I really love this concept. I love what Kyle Starks has done here, and I love how he's fleshing it out. It feels like if you liked Cabin in the Woods in particular, I think you're going to love this because it has the same sort of feel while still leaning into terror.
Yeah, it's a fun mixture of humor and terror, and someone who is scared of horror, this does a great job of like walking that line in a very kind of enjoyable way. Like the human poncho joke was hysterical by that little creepy guy. You got an old lady running around, kind of running the show, calling the shots. See what I did there? Mm-hmm. And then the art just really kind of heightens the whole kind of levity of the whole situation. So, yeah, this is a really fun premise that's really well executed and worth checking out.
Is this a hard month for you, October, Pete?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yes, it is.
Seems like it might be. Yeah. Destro number 5 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Andre Bresson. This is the final issue for this title as Destro fights back against Tomax and Zomat.
Zaymont, yeah.
Sure.
Tomax and Zaymont.
It sets up the
forwards and backwards because they're twins.
No, I get it. I get it. Okay. And it sets up the events leading into G.I. Joe number 1 next month. By the way, go and listen to our interview with Joshua Williamson.
We dove into
what to expect from G.I. Joe. Real bummer that you weren't there, Pete.
Yeah.
Because you would have known what he was talking about. Mostly it was me, Justin, being like, I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, that had to be very frustrating.
Why don't you talk? Most of our questions are like, could you talk about that more? Oh, say more, please.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, I wasn't there for that.
No. We hopefully know what we're talking about. But anyway, yeah. What'd you think about this? You're the G.I. Joe guy. What'd you think about the wrap of Destro?
This continues to be great. It's fun to see the Crimson Guard. I'm sure you were very excited about that. I just think that this is such a cool kind of fun combination and nostalgia, but also kind of pushing some new stuff, which is great. I mean, you had to be so excited that Scrap Iron made an appearance in this. I mean, this is some really
And just fun. Real quick, describe Scrap Iron for me, the character.
He was the one who was like, I liked it when things go boom. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just kind of a typical villain type of, you know.
For sure.
Yeah, but yeah, I Destro, it's crazy to kind of have this because Destro really, you know, I mean, they don't really go into it. So it's kind of interesting to kind of go into his whole backstory here and, you know, and then goes full like flaming mask there. That was some scary shit. But
I still have questions about how his masks worked. Like, it's just very form fitting to his face. But I had a good time reading this. I think this has a very darkly comic vibe. I enjoyed this series. Even if you don't know stuff about G.I. Joe, I think you can have
a good time. If you do, there's so many great Easter eggs and stuff to get excited about.
But if you don't, there aren't, and it still works.
It's still a great comic either way. I agree with you.
Crypt of Shadows, number one from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando. Ooh, let me open this up. Steve Orlando, Chris Condon, Jason Liu, Benjamin Percy, art by Claire Rowe, Jabril Morissette Fan, Carlos Magno, and Raphael Ienko. We've got a horror host in Agatha Harkness on another magic planet telling spooky tales from the Marvel Universe. I thought this was a lot of fun. I wasn't quite sure what to expect here, but I enjoyed the stories. We get a little bit of Steve Orlando doing much. Scarlet Witch and Vision story that I thought was kind of cute. And the rest of them as well. I had a good time with this.
Yeah, I mean, with a collection of stories, sometimes there's misses and bangers. But I really thought this was all bangers. I thought a really impressive collection of stories here. I mean, Steve Orlando just continues to kill the game. Everything he is touching is just really well done. I love the first story with Agatha and love the Man-Thing and Namor one as well. And then the Blade versus Kraven was really cool. Yeah, this was great. I had a blast with this.
Good times, and not scary because it's superheroes, right?
People? Yes. How about that?
How about that? Green Lantern, number 16 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Zermonico. We've got all of our Green Lanterns mounting a final assault on a bunch of different things in a bunch of different directions, trying to take the universe back for Green Lanterns. This is a DC all-in issue as well, and I got to tell you what, I love the series. This is maybe the least accessible for new readers of anything we've read in DC all-in. I still really enjoyed it because I've really been enjoying this run. This spins right off of the Civil Corps special that brought together the threads from the Jon Stewart title with the Hal Jordan's title, and it's following it here. It's still fun. It's funny. There's some nice romantic moments with Carol and Hal in here as well. What'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, I really love the Lantern Purple Gold relationship. Tons of action. Great tease for what's next to come. Awesome art. This felt like a really good Green Lantern book.
Yeah. The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos Halloween special from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tate Bromble, Sue Lee, Nick Robles, and James Tynion IV. Art by Morgan Beam, Sue Lee, Nick Robles, Isaac Goodhart, and Fernando Blanco. Per the title, this is a bunch of different tales taking place throughout the Christopher Chaos universe, spinning off the title there, that follows the main character, who we still don't know exactly what his deal is yet, but his friends are all in sort of a de facto monster squad, so we focus in on some of them. Man, I love this collection. I didn't know how this would work, taking it away from the main team, giving it different art styles, but it is really showing how malleable this concept is. I thought, from front to back, every single one of these stories was wonderful. The first story with a kid, Christopher Chaos, bonding with Adam Frankenstein on Halloween, to the story of, what is it, Dracula Boy is the name of the character, and beyond. I thought these were really, really good, and the art was stunning throughout.
Yeah, this was a really fantastic collection of stories here. This was really impressive. It's nice to see a book that is so well kind of curated here. The art in the first one is just so cool. Such a kind of touching story. And then love the watercolor type of style to the art here. Just so cool. And then the werewolf second story is great. Love the fun kind of moment where they're trying on different costumes, a little shot of Batman there. This was fun. And there was also really cool, like, pin-up pages in between. I love those as a kid growing up reading comics. Love the vampire versus kind of devil third story as well. I just think that it was just really, really well done and had a great vision that was well executed. So this is impressive.
Yeah, and you can, again, pick this up even if you haven't been reading Christopher Chaos, because I think it's a really good introduction to the world of this book. And frankly, there's nothing against the book that I really like a lot. Maybe a better introduction even than the book itself. The stories are a little simpler, a little more straightforward than the twisty, purposefully off-putting narrative that often happens in the book. So great stuff. Now, let's move over to the most heartbreaking issue of the week, Pete. I don't know if you felt the same.
What are you talking about? Wonder Woman was the most heartbreaking issue of the week.
Nope. Local Man, number 25, from Image Comics by Tony Fleeks and Tim Seeley. And I'm going to get this out of the way up front. This is because it is, surprise, the last issue of the series.
You got to be fleeking Seeley. Are you serious?
Yeah. Didn't you read the end of the issue?
I did. I'm just upset about it.
Yeah. So a bunch of stuff is going on here after the end of the previous issue, which I believe was issue number 13. They're doing something that they did back in the day at Image called Images of Tomorrow, where it jumped forward a year. So they're giving us issue 25, even though the last issue was 12 issues back, I guess, jumping a year in the future and giving us a end for Local Man and wrapping up all the storylines. It is the end for now, but I was so bummed when I saw that because I've been loving the series, and I was even more bummed when I read Tony's note in the back he said he talked about the realities of trying to put out an independent comic book series, and he was like, I gotta pay bills. I mean, he didn't say it this way, but he was like, basically, I gotta pay bills. It costs a lot of money to do this. We love doing this, but in the amount of time it takes me to do Local Man, I could be doing two or three other things at the same time. So we're gonna put it on the shelf for a while. Maybe we'll come back at some other time. Apparently, they're planning another mini series that they're gonna do together, which is great news. But man, for 14 issues, but kind of 25 issues, this has been one of the best books on the stand. So good on them for keeping this secret, but I was so bummed to hear that it's going out.
Yeah, I mean, that's really hard because, you know, it's understandable. You know what I mean? It's just heartbreaking to, you know, learn about how the sausage is made a little bit. And sometimes the things that you love for some reason don't kind of make the cut. So, this is hard on many levels. Also, personally, because we got a shout out in this comic, you know, hoping the comic book club bump would help it, you know, stay afloat. But that didn't happen. I was very touched by the way they kind of like told the story in this issue, you know, kind of getting to wrap stuff up. But yeah, they're such a great writing team, you know, like.
And art team, too. Everything that happened here, all the backup stories, all the innovative things they did structurally were awesome as well.
You're right. That's a good point.
And I will also say, for anybody who has heard us talk about this book incessantly for the past year and change, it ends really well here. You know, they leave it open, so of course they can come back at some point if they have some time, if there's more they want to say. But I really feel like this, as sad as I am to see it go, it told a complete story over the course of it. They wrapped everything up nicely, gave it a good emotional closure. So I'm really happy with how it ended. I hate seeing it leave, but I love watching it go, you know?
You don't get to land the plane, you know what I mean? You start an idea and then things happen and it gets taken away from you. So the fact that they got to kind of like write a great ending, we can hold this up in years to come, say like Local Man was a great comic, which it
is. I really thought you were going to say. Years from now, we could just say YOLO. That's what I thought you were going to say. And then you said Yo Local Man. So, anyway.
I don't understand how your mind works, my friend, but all right.
Years from now, we can say YOLO.
Let's just take a moment, though, and thank Tony Fleeks and Tim Seeley and all the people who made this comic, because it was awesome, and it was great to read and be on this ride. So thank you for all the work that went into this. It was, it was a pleasure. So appreciate you.
There you go. Next up, Ultimate Spider-Man, number 10 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by David Messina. In this issue, we're focusing in on JJJ and Ben Parker as they investigate, a bunch of things. I'm not going to exactly ruin what it is, because part of this whole issue is what they're actually investigating. But this is basically like all the president's men sent in the Ultimate Universe. And this might be my favorite issue so far. I thought this
was... Oh, my God.
I loved it.
What the fuck,
loved it.
This is just like, hey, did you ever want to know what it would be like to try to run your own paper?
Yeah.
Well, fuck Spider-Man, because that's what we're focusing on. Spider-Man was in here for like a panel, and this was mostly like the struggles of making a paper are insane. The pressure.
If you ever heard J. Jonah Jameson say, get me pictures of Spider-Man, and wondered what happens next, yeah, this is the issue for you.
They're like, hey, what do people love about Spider-Man? Well, the ins and outs of trying to get a deadline.
All joking aside, you didn't think this was a good, like, not political thriller, but like business thriller?
You just said business thriller. No, like somebody like, at home.
Okay,
is
did
like,
you ever see?
Oh gosh, what I've been finally waiting for.
I'm talking about
business.
Have you seen
thriller.
All the President's Men? Have you seen Spotlight? Any of those sort of like investigative journalist movies? They're great because it builds up the tension there.
Right, but the title of those weren't Spider-Man. You know what I mean? It wasn't Ultimate Spider-Man.
Excuse me.
The
Hulk was in Spotlight. And Alexander Pierce, the character from Captain America the Winter Soldier, was in all the President's Men, okay? They were both
reaching.
In the MCU. We all know that.
That's not real facts.
Spider-Man was just off screen the entire time. They just never mentioned
Cool. Name it something that it is then. I feel like I'm you in this argument. You hate when titles mislead.
All the President's Spider-Men. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, okay, great. I'm glad you did a fun joke in your head and then got to say it out loud.
Did you really not like this, Pete?
Yes. I'm being honest. tell how I feel it, man. I don't know.
I thought that I really did think this was great.
I don't know how many kids are like, you know, well, I want to spend more time with is J. Jonah Jameson. The biggest asshole in maybe all of comics.
Yes, you are correct in that. That is a question that I've had all along for 10 issues now. Like, who is this for?
We're 10 issues in, and it's still a paper story about...
It's still a paper story. It's still about a Spider-Man.
Scrappy old dudes running
It's a
around.
Spider-Man with a beard who's like, honestly, I'd rather play chess with my kids than go do Spider-Man stuff. Yep. It's
who's this for, dude? Like, I think... We're
this issue
old
is
people,
definitely for
and
me.
You're like, oh man, I love stuff about business. And,
well, what's crazy to me though is this is the biggest hit that Marvel has right now, which makes it the biggest hit in the comic book industry. So obviously, it's for a lot of people. Like
are
a
you
lot
serious?
Of people, yes, a slew of people are buying this comic book. It is an enormous hit.
I am so off the mark about the.
No, I know, but it's. I can't quite figure it out because it's definitely like
makes no
this
sense
is
to me.
Squarely aimed at 35 to 38 year olds. That's pretty much it. So if you were not that and you were enjoying that, would love to hear from you in the comments on this show. Please let us know if you're enjoying Ultimate Spider-Man because I love this issue. I thought this was great. You know how you usually are like, I stood up and clapped. I did that at the end of this issue.
Are you
like,
serious? You closed
the
this
place,
comic and
the
you
place
were just
that
like,
it ends up, I was like, yes, best issue so far.
Oh my God.
Loved it.
If
and I don't want to spoil what happens at the end
for
the 35 to 38 year olds who are reading this book. Don't want to spoil it.
How is there, I don't understand comics, man. I don't understand comics.
We've really
anymore.
Got on a journey this episode, I got to say. Yeah. Well, let's see if you understood this one. Action Comics 1071 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki, art by Clayton Henry and Michael Shelfer and Skylar Patridge. The front story sends Superman to the Phantom Zone, and the backstory finds Supergirl investigating a weird mystery in space. Great issue. I love getting this weekly. Very happy about that. There's some weird, interesting stuff here. There's some fun continuity stuff that they roll out. Good story.
This is a great package. Justin likes to talk about tight packages, and I think this is it's Justin's birthday, by the way. Shout out to JT Sizzle.
Hey, happy birthday, Justin.
Hey, we're
also
glad you were
I gotta
alive.
Say, I think you say this is a tight package way more than Justin ever has.
Well, I like saying it because he said it once or made a joke about it, and I jumped on it. But anyways, I just think that this is, you get a great Superman story. This is a badass cover, by the way. It's such a cool perspective here. Mm-hmm.
What would you do if you met a spider that big, Pete?
I would just light myself on fire and run away.
That's it for me.
You know,
I'm a birthday candle now.
Coming back from that. But I just,
it would lighter fluid all over your body.
And I'd just be like, I don't want to live in this world anymore. but the backup story is also so great. You know what I mean? Like, the art style, that's what I mean by total package here. This has got such a cool 1-2 punch. One's better than the other. I think they're both amazing, but man alive, some great storytelling. You're getting a lot of bang for your buck here in this comic. This is just absolutely fantastic.
I agree with the great package. I'll give a specific shout out to Skylar Patridge's art on the Supergirl story. Really, really love that stuff. There's some interesting cosmic things that happened in there that I thought were very neat.
Also fun spider theme for both of them.
Spider theme.
We have Spider-Man a comic just that's not about Spider-Man.
Ultimate Action Spider-Man. I don't know. The Twain number 4 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Rachel Stott. This is a spinoff of Public Domain, showing us the comic inside the comic. Things are really heating up here as our three characters continue to get control of their powers. I think this is my favorite issue so far because it got over the expectations I had for the book. Like, going into it, and I've talked about this with previous issues, I felt like in Public Domain, we're supposed to expect this is the best comic of all time. This is incredible. And this is like a fun superhero story. This is the one where – this is the issue where it really felt like it hit rhythm. We got the characters going. We got the situations going. It's still not like – this is blowing my mind as a superhero comic, but it's fun. It's off kilter. The character dynamics are interesting. So I am fully on board at this point.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I feel like really things click in this issue. Also, really fun last page. Great art, interesting story. It's, I don't want to spoil things, but like they make some decisions where it's finally like, okay, this is where I wanted it to go and I was hoping, and now we're kind of really kind of trucking along. So yeah, just a blast here.
Daredevil, Woman Without Fear, number 4 from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Michael Dowling and Ivan Fiorelli. This is the final issue of this series, but we are following. There's more to come. There's going to be a Daredevil Red Band starring Elektra. We got Elektra versus the new Punisher, round 56. Pete, you're clapping. Take it away.
Oh, man. I don't want Matt Murdock back as Daredevil anymore. I just want this. This is so much better, so interesting, very cool. I love the way Elektra is tackling life, trying to be herself and Daredevil and all that kind of stuff. Also, just like so refreshing that like, oh no, it's Punisher versus Daredevil. They're going to fight and then they're going to team up. It was like great for Elektra just to be like, yo, what's your deal? Like, before we just start fucking shooting each other, can we just feel each other out a little bit? Like, what are you about? What am I about? Can we kind of like figure this out? I loved it. I think this is great art, great storytelling. And it, with Elektra, it just makes it a more interesting story. She has this badass dark background that is just her trying to be human, and I just think it's more interesting. I think it's instead of, you know, Matt being shitty to women and then also a shitty friend and then a shitty superhero and a shitty priest, like this is more interesting. There's more layers to this, and I'm having a blast. I think this was just such a well executed issue.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really have much to add other than I really enjoyed this as well. I also agree with you that I think Elektra is better Daredevil at this point than Matt, and I'm very excited for the Red Band series.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this one. Jenny Sparks, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Jeff Spokes. The situation here is that Captain Adam is trying to become a god, and so has taken a bunch of regular humans hostage in a bar and is torturing them. Jenny Sparks, meanwhile, is on the outside, occasionally sparring with him. And in this issue, the Justice League shows up and tries to stop him. And it doesn't go well, to put it lightly. This is also a Black Label book, so I'll mention it's out of continuity, so you can intuit perhaps some of the things that happen here in terms of this conflict. I think it becomes clearer what King is trying to say in this issue if you add it up with the previous issues of the series, that given that we started with 9/11 in issue 2, I believe he's trying to comment on the war on terror and particularly what happened with America, its inability to do things, its inability to get involved, the way that it got involved on the war on terror, the way that it spirals out of control, and how it has ramifications to this day. But that's the greater themes he's dealing with, and I get that, but it's very unpleasant to read.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about this. This missed me. I couldn't understand what was really happening or why or what. I just know there's a woman who likes to smoke. She's a smoker, and that's important to her character.
She's a joker. She's a midnight toker.
Hey, look at this guy. But yeah, I didn't... I tried.
It is incredibly dark what happens in this issue. There are ways to reverse it that we've already seen. Again, I'm bouncing around spoilers here. The main issue that I'm having with this right now, to kind of the point that you're getting at, Pete, is we don't know enough about Jenny Sparks at this point, or what she wants or what she needs to do. We know far more about Captain
Adam. I know
Adam.
She likes to have a light. You know, yes. What I mean, and gets frustrated when other people want to help her with that. And that's all I know about her.
Right. Is this saying something? Is she supposed to be a stand-in for the UK because she has the British flag? I don't know. We need more about her, and we're probably getting there. Tom King knows what he's doing in terms of writing, but I'm really not getting that in these first three issues. That said, Jeff Spokes art is fantastic. It's very detailed. It's very reminiscent of Wildstorm without specifically being Brian Hitch or anything like that. So I think he's a good choice for this book. I am troubled by reading it at this point. Let's move on. Talk about Uncanny X-Men number 4 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by David Marquez. In this issue, Wolverine is battered and bruised and ripped apart after his conflict with Sarah Gaunt, the new villain that they're facing, and Rogue decides to take her on solo in this issue, while we find out a little bit more about the villain's history and her connection to the new Gray Malkin prison. Pete, your boy, laid out in this issue. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I love the cover. It's just such a cool-looking cover. Do we need another story about Charles Xavier being shitty? I don't. I'm having a hard time. I think the Gaunt character, this kind of death character, is really badass, and the fights are epic. And you're like, oh God, is Rogue gonna make it? Like, I'm hanging on that stuff. But the Charles stuff, I'm just like, I've seen this. Mm-hmm. I've seen this so many times.
We haven't seen all of the story yet with Sarah and Charles. We don't know exactly what's going on there. It seems like there might be some selective storytelling happening.
Sure, but right now it shows Charles Xavier being an asshole to someone who's being like, hey, I'm pregnant. Mm-hmm. Why is that fun?
I don't know, man.
Okay, so you know what I mean? Like,
I guess we'll find out. We'll find out.
Maybe how are you going to retroactively save yourself from that setup? Like, later he's going to be cool with it, so we're going to be cool with it?
Maybe. I think we don't know everything about the Sarah Gaunt character.
That's true.
We're going to find out more about exactly what's going on with her.
Okay. She seems still being a dickhead, though.
Pretty weird. Great David Marquez art. Let's move on and talk about Violator.
Yes, the art is amazing.
Violator number 2 from Image Comics, written by Mark Andreyko, art by Kyle Hotz. The first issue gave us the origin of Violator. He was an angel who was thrown down from heaven. And in this issue, he goes up against a Viking-style spawn for the first time. We learn sort of why, maybe not why he dresses like a clown, but at least why he dresses up in a skin suit as a human. I do still have a little bit of a problem with some of the connective fiber here, like I was talking about the end of the first issue, where it was like, he was an angel thrown down from heaven, and now he looks like the Violator. This one is like, he went from being an upset angel to now he's a cackling maniac demon dude. But man, the art is good in here. Kyle Hotz stuff in here is very reminiscent of Kelly Jones. It feels like in that style. There's some great action sequences. And I like the connection, how they connect Violator and Spawn here. I thought that was very fun. What'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff. But, you know, shout out to Hot Stuff. I love that comic back in the day. Anyways, yeah, I mean, Alex, what you don't know is when you fall from heaven, you know, you hit mountains and stuff on the way down, and it's going to leave a mark. And sometimes it's really going to mess up your face and then give you horns, and then you're going to have to, like, smile and laugh at things in weird ways, okay? So don't judge people who've
fallen. Did you fall from heaven, though? Because there are stars in your eyes.
I hit every branch on the way down. I think this is just over-the-top gross action fun. You know what I mean? Where it's monsters fighting monsters. You know, the Violator monologuing about his life during it. But, you know, it's still, you know, kind of fun Spawn stuff that's badassly drawn and, you know, a ton of violent over-the-top stuff.
Fun Spawn stuff. Wolverine number 2 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Martin Kokolo. Wolverine is still wandering through the Canadian wilderness, and he comes up against a old enemy here in a new form, the Wendigo. As we all know, the Wendigo is formed when somebody eats human flesh, turns into a Wendigo, and now they can turn other people into Wendigo by eating their flesh. We got a little bit of a twist on it here that I thought was nice. I'm a little confused about what this title is at this point, because the first issue wasn't exactly done in one, but we presented a new enemy and we got a new situation. And then this issue, none of that. Now we're on to what seems like a two-part Wendigo story. So I don't know, but seems like you liked it, Pete.
Yes, I love this. I started slow clapping at the end of it. I love so much. Also, Alex, let's not, you know, Marvel's taking a hard stance here on cannibalism, and I think it's important to talk about. Don't eat people, okay?
They're taking, I got to be honest with you, I understand what you're saying, but in this issue, they're taking a light stance on cannibalism, because Wolverine is like, yeah, you ate one person, but it's okay. Come on, let's get you better, buddy.
Hey, it's not the Wendigo's fault that somebody ate somebody. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You know, he's just though, out there because he ate a person.
Okay. but then he turns into the Wendigo, and you got to help.
Sure,
the Wendigo.
Not his fault that he becomes the Wendigo. He doesn't know he's going to become a Wendigo by eating somebody.
Although now that you're saying that, it seems like a cool way to get superpowers, but that's not what happens. So don't do it. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyways, we were really,
hey,
I don't
Pete,
know.
How did you become a Wendigo?
Shut up.
Got some questions.
Don't ask. Yeah, don't ask questions. All right. No, but this is a great issue. I also love to see Wolverine stop to enjoy a nice sunrise. You know what I mean? Like, he's got a busy, insane life. You know, on his birthday, just like Justin's birthday, his best friend throws up and tries to fight him to the death. So, you know, they're super busy.
Yes.
But
wait, before I forget, what was it when he puts out his claws and they go snicked, and then he puts them back in and they go like snack when he pulls them back in the next battle? I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun. It's fun with action words. I mean, it does seem a little bit kind of crazy where, like, he was literally, like, 2 feet away from this giant army, and then Wendigo comes crashing down, and then there's, like, they don't deal with them for a couple pages. But I still think that this is just a kind of fun, you know, as a Wolverine fan, seeing Wendigo and Wolverine together again, there's some nostalgia in that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's cool. But then I was like, oh, I didn't know that about Wendigos, or maybe that I did and just forgot about it because I
been the thing.
That cannibalism thing. I was like, I don't remember that part. So that's a little weird. Yeah. But anyways, this is a fun book. It's great to see kind of Wolverine trying to solve crimes with the Wendigo. You know what I mean? Because he can only say Wendigo and apparently help. So that's going to be tough to kind of get answers out of him. But
it's going to be fun to watch them. I'm excited for this season.
Yeah.
TV. Anyway, if you have one takeaway from the show today, it's probably don't eat human flesh unless you want to become a Wendigo. Titans number 16 from DC Comics, written by John Layman, art by Pete Woods, another DC all-in title. And this one does have a big fresh start. And it's a weird one, I think, just continuity-wise, because for the past year or two, they've been pushing Titans to this place where they are the premier super team in the DC universe. Justice League is gone. They stepped up. We saw Nightwing in particular step up in a big way.
Yeah.
And this issue, they're like, well, back to being Titans again. And it feels and weird.
Donna
like,
is the
they talk the about it leader. A little bit, but like, I don't know. It felt weird to me to be, they'd be like, oh, what's going on now? We're on the Justice League satellite. Okay. Time to
go. Yeah. But you
to
wanted
Titan
them
Tower.
To sit down and talk about business and really get into like, you know, how a new team is formed.
How do they pay the rent on that T-shaped building?
Oh man, it's a pretty cool building.
Is it?
It's in the shape of a T.
Shaped as a T. I don't know. I don't want to be in any of those. I don't want to be in the stems. You know what I'm talking about?
That's the place
seems
to be.
Scary. No, that's scary. It's not how a skyscraper works.
It does in a T-shaped building.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, yeah, this is a good jumping on point. It's the start of something new. So, yeah, definitely it'll be interesting to see. They're doing kind of some setup stuff in here that, I think it'll be interesting at Donna being the
I like John Layman. I like Pete Woods, so I'm happy to read some more. But this felt like it had a lot of work to do after everything that happened previously to get back on track. But the place that they get to is fun and the showdown is fun, so...
Yeah, and then it teased at the end. It's pretty cool.
I'll keep reading. Spider-Man Reign 2, number 4 for Marvel by Kare Andrews. I could not even begin to tell you what's happening in this comic book.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm not alone.
I mean,
that.
I could begin, but I'm probably wrong. This is... God, I really...
Are you going to try?
Sure. Peter... No, I can't. I can't do it. There's too many things going on, and I don't remember the details. But I do know that Peter Parker has traveled back in time to save Mary Jane and discovered that she is Venom. He has done it multiple times, but you can't change the timeline. So it turns out that Venom has consumed multiple Peter Parkers and has all their skulls inside of his symbiote. Meanwhile, the Black Cat's kid is actually not the Black Cat's kid. She is the child of Miles Morales and Gwen Stacy. Gwen Stacy died when they put a dome down on New York City due to some actions from Spider-Man. And now that Spider-Man has gotten a haircut at the end of the issue, they're all headed back to the future to do something. It looks like fight Kingpin based on the cover. I could not even begin to tell you, though, what the point of this series is, because I don't know what it's saying about Spider-Man or any of the other characters. And it's a real bummer, because every once in a while, there's a panel of Kare Andrews art where I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah.
But it's in the middle of so much mess. And I hate being this negative, but that's what
also
this is.
At the start of that, you died a little bit inside. I saw it on your face.
I did.
It was, yeah.
I'm
sorry
this
that.
Close to eating Kare Andrews and becoming the Wendigo.
Oh my God. Well, just think of, here's the thing about being a Wendigo. You can't say anything other than Wendigo. It's not a good thing to do. Don't eat people. Okay.
Hold on. I just have a question for you because I went to the bookstore today and I paid $50 to get Life Lessons for the Wendigo. Am I going to open that up and every page is just going to say Wendigo?
Yep. It might say
God
help at the last page, but
God damn it.
Yeah, this is not fun. It's amazing art, though, and there is a nice Peter MJ moment, but that I couldn't make sense of. But I have no idea. There's so many things going on in different time. But the art's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's worth picking up and kind of paging through to be like, oh, cool.
I will say this. When people were comparing Spider-Man Reign to Dark Knight Returns, they were thought, oh, is Spider-Man Reign 2 going to be like Dark Knight Returns again? And in fact, it is. So there you go. They're both horrible messes that probably should have never existed.
Oh, wow, dude.
I'm sorry. Wow. I'm sorry. It's just not good. It's really bumming me out. Witchblade number 4 from Image Comics, written by Marguerite Bennett, art by Giuseppe Caffaro. In this issue, Witchblade is being trained by Ian Nottingham, but he is double-dealing her at the same time. And I'll tell you what, Witchblade getting crazy horny once again this issue. Every issue that happens, and it happens here again. Pete, take it away.
So what's funny about, the way you yelled the title is I just pictured you standing over a bunch of knives and you going, which blade do you want me to use here?
That's how they came up with the idea for Witchblade.
Yeah.
Witchblade. Say that again. Okay. Now we got something here.
Yeah, I mean, this issue is cool learning about Witchblade as she, learns from her trainer who is a spy. But, great art.
I'm really enjoying this, I will say, on the positive bend. I like this take on Witchblade. It is, I know you don't like it when I point this out, but it is crazy how every issue she's like, I am unbelievably horny. I just cannot stop being horny. It is driving me insane. So it's kind of wild that that is a main defining characteristic of Sarah Bazzini at this point. But I like the twists and turns. I like what's going on with all of the characters. I think this is very accessible, like we've talked about, whether you know anything about Witchblade or not. So I'm having fun reading this.
Yeah. I mean, when you turn into a weapon, they don't talk about the side effects. It's crazy horny. And they're really tackling that issue.
Yeah, that's when I looked into that drawer at all of my blades. I'm like, which one is the horniest? And I pick that one and I use it to make dinner.
Always. That's the best way when you're about to do anything. Always think to yourself, which one is the horniest? And that's the one you pick.
Yep. Star Wars, The Battle of Jakku, Insurgency Rising number 2, written by Alex Segura, art by Leonard Kirk. I think we were pleasantly surprised by the first issue in terms of continuing the story of Return of the Jedi. Things get way more complicated in this issue with multiple factions. What do you think? Did it really hold up in the second issue, or did it hold down, which is the opposite?
Oh, thanks for explaining that. Yep. Yeah, I continue to think this is a great idea, and I'm liking this. I mean, first off, great art. You know, I like this idea of picking up after Return of the Jedi and just kind of exploring some stuff, and it's fun to see people from different movies in here. So I'm still having a blast with this.
Yeah, this is good Star Wars stuff. Like I said, I think it gets a lot more complicated in this issue than it did the first issue, but I was very happy to see that Abel Hard may not be our main villain here, because he's fine, but we get some much cooler villains introduced in this issue.
Yeah, definitely.
Ultra Mega, number 6 from Image Comics by James Herron. Here's another one that I'd be hard-pressed to tell you the story of, but mostly it is about a kid who is a kaiju fighter and his dad, who is a large head with legs and arms, and some stuff that's going on around them.
Yeah, it's kind of the giant head has a sad moment in this issue.
Which sure does.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. But I love all the action, amazing art. This is just really kind of cool kaiju fighting stuff, but then some weird kind of touching stories weaved in between. Yeah, it's a lot happening, but it's a great pace, and you definitely get what you think from the cover in there. You know what I mean?
I guess it is. I'm confused still, and somebody razzed me in one of the comments on YouTube for being confused about the previous issue, but I continue to be confused here in terms of exactly what's going on with this story. If you had told me it was published in France in the 1980s, and they were finally releasing it here in the United States in English for the first time, I would 100% believe you, because it's that level of, like, we're on a lot of psychedelics while we're making this. But I don't know. Art's really good, like you said. Bloodhunters, number
also,
3.
I'm glad to hear people razz you in the comments.
They do, all the time.
Yeah, that's fun.
Some serious razzing going on. from a bunch of whippersnappers. Bloodhunters number 3 from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Robert Gill. The Bloodhunters are still fighting against the Blood Coven, I think that was the name of the group, who are the Black Order of Bloodhunt. And they are trying to turn the tide there. They do so thanks to a bunch of masks from Hallow's Eve, which I thought was a fun use of that. Plus, as you can see on the cover, if you are looking at the cover live right now, we got a vampire cat, and can't hate that.
Yeah, I mean, come on, vampire cat. That's good stuff. Yeah, the blood hunt, man. Blood hunt's not over. I'm glad we're still
blood hunt never ends. As long as we have blood, we'll always have the blood hunt.
Yeah. Yeah, fighting vamps and monsters. Fun Hallow's Eve, kicking butt, sharing masks. This is great stuff. A ton of action. I mean, what's not to like here? If you're reading a book called Blunt Hunters, you know what you're getting, and they deliver.
They hunt some blood.
Yeah, plus a little cat fun.
Star Trek number 25 from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Liana Kangas. We are getting the, I totally blanked on the phrase, whatever it is, countdown, sure, to the Lore War, the big event that's happening next year. Lore has made an attack on the Star Trek universe, changed and broken time to turn the entire universe into his twisted version of it. And our ship is lost in the process in the space between universes, and they're trying to fight their way out there. I thought this was a really great issue. I know we've been only sporadically checking in with Star Trek, but I was curious to get back into it because it is the 25th issue and because we are heading to this Lore War event that I'm pretty stoked about. I think it's a fun concept. But this is a good Star Trek issue that really mixes some emotion, courtesy of Paris, with some good action stuff and classic Star Trek info dump stuff as well. And it has a great cliffhanger that makes me really excited about the next issue.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like a great Star Trek comic here where, you know, you kind of know what you're getting into. I mean, they pull a little Futurama here where Data's just ahead. But, you know, you get some old school Scotty in there, which was fun to see. Yeah, I feel like this does a great job of balancing like nostalgia from older Star Trek stuff that you know and love, and then kind of getting excited about newer stuff. So I think they do a good job walking that line.
Avengers Assemble, number 2 for Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Scott Eaton. In this issue, our makeshift Avengers team is headed to a town that has been attacked by gorilla ghosts. Who can be behind it? The Red Ghost, the guy who hangs out with gorillas all the time. What'd you think about this one, Pete?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense when you say it like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people don't talk about, you know, the different kinds of ghosts, and the gorilla ghost can be kind of the, you know, more scarier stuff. So, yeah, this comic is really tackling big issues like that. But really, for me, I love to see Herc back. Hercules, when done well, is such a fun character, and Steve Orlando does a great job of writing Herc. It kind of reminds me of the old days of Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente writing a great Hercules book. So, yeah, I love this. I thought it was fun, and, you know, felt like a fun Avengers kind of team-up, you know?
I like the one scene of Wasp and Julie Powers hanging out back down at the mansion. They had a nice bonding moment there that I thought was kind of neat and well done. It also pointed out how weird it was that all the dudes went on a mission and left the women behind. That was a little strange. But there was a bunch of other fun bonding things there. There was, oh gosh, I'm even forgetting who he's hanging out with, but Wonder Man is hanging out and watching movies with somebody at some point. So there's moments around the mansion I thought were really fun, and what Steve Orlando is going for here is a very, like, classic Avengers mansion, Avengers vibe, which I appreciated. Good stuff. Summer Shadows, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by John Harris Dunning, art by Ricardo Cabral. I know we were a little mixed on the first issue of this, even though I think generally we appreciated what they were doing, because you've got a bunch of different stories running at the same time. You've got a guy who is looking for his sort of boyfriend slash guy he hooked up with who has gone missing on a Greek island. You've also got a cop who is slowly investigating a similar mystery. Thankfully, things really start to come together in this issue in a nice way. So if you did feel like things were too disparate in the first issue, The everything starts to weave together here, which I really liked. And I still really like the art on this one as well. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I agree. A lot of great art on here. I feel like the story is kind of crazy, but also very interesting and well-balanced. I mean, it's kind of a lot of people walking around talking about yachts and people's minds being wiped, but and there's evil goats, you know, like don't fuck with evil goats, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that, you know, it's an interesting question, you know, like if it's an evil goat, do you right. still do the right thing and put it out of its misery? You know what I mean?
You don't have to say evil goat. That's repetitive. You can just say goat.
How dare you, sir?
Have you ever seen a goat's eyes?
Yeah.
There's a reason that Satan has a goat head in real life. It's because goats are evil.
We're talking about real Satan
the
right
real
now?
Satan. We're talking about the real Satan. Lucifer Morningstar, if you will.
Right, right.
He's got a goat's head, man. Goats are evil. And all goats are the child of the devil.
You can't say
suckling at his
like that.
Milky, bloody teeth.
Not all goats are evil. What about the goats that eat up stuff that people are going to like throw away and they're kind of providing
a
service?
Oh, I'm sorry. Your argument that goats are good is they eat garbage and they're happy to do it? That seems like a good thing to you?
Yeah, they clear off fields and do stuff like... It's a real job that they do.
Yeah, all right.
Service.
I'm going to take a lot of advice from the it's okay to occasionally eat human flesh here and
that's
there.
That's not what I said.
I can play the tape back right now. This is on
I did not say that.
8-track tape. That's how we record this podcast.
Oh, hey, look at that shout out.
The Department of Truth, speaking of things that are true, number 26 from Image Comics, written by James Todd IV, art by Allison Sampson. We are taking a slight but not complete swerve from the Lee Harvey Oswald assassination storyline to talk about Marilyn Monroe. And this is an interesting issue, not just because it has a different artist on it, because I think Allison Sampson is very complimentary to Martin Simmons. But it felt like a much lighter issue to me, not in terms of subject matter, but it's really mostly just one very simple scene for the most part, dealing with how, and spoilers here, but how Marilyn Monroe's personal continuity is messed up by the malleable nature of truth in the world of this comic book, which I thought was a really interesting concept, but where we've gotten these very meaty issues thus far, this felt like I was surprised when it ended because it felt like it ended rather quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad the JT Sizzle isn't here because he loves the Department of Truth. And the Marilyn Monroe choice, I was a little like, oh wow, this are we out of ideas and we're just kind of going with pop culture icons or something like, but. I was impressed the way they kind of, you know, spoilers here, but kind of we brought back that creepy lady with no eyes in the red dress here. So, and this is kind of teased on the cover that we're seeing here.
Just to push back on the are we out of ideas, I don't think they are. I think they're using a woman who was the most famous woman in the world, who everybody talked about, made up gossip about, and ultimately maybe she probably died because of all of this. They're exploring that in this issue. Like this.
Yeah, I just feel like it went conspiracy theories, and then it's like Marilyn Monroe was a mysterious figure. And it's like, okay.
Well, true, but she's not, right? Like what this book is saying is we've seen how they change the bigger things. This is showing what happens when it focuses on one person.
Okay.
All right. You don't have to like it. That's fine.
I just felt like they shifted gears a little bit.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Last but not least, Barfly, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Ryan Brown. This is part of the Minor Threats universe. We're following a character who is a wingless fly named Shit Eater, who is just trying to be in a garage band with his friends instead of working for his old boss, and it is not working out. Love this book. Like we talked about with the previous Kyle Starks book, there's a lot of dark humor going on here. This is definitely pushing what they could do in the Minor Threats universe in terms of comedy and humor. But man, I love also how packed every panel Ryan Brown makes with jokes throughout. I don't know if that's in the script. I don't know if that's a combination of the two of them, but it's just really, really fun to read.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to it and fun to kind of look at the backgrounds and see all the details and the really cool stuff. You can tell this is made with a lot of passion and care because it really jumps out at you. But yeah, we're pulling for this Barfly and, you know, kind of has the time of his life in this issue, you know, so gets to go see an amazing concert, gets a smoochy poo. So it's exciting times, great times to be alive. And but we know Fly's lifespan is not long, so, you know, it's a little worrying. But man, this is just continues to be a fun blast, artistically really impressive.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Sure, come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the abandoned old shack where we're going to eat you.
Oh, no.
Hell.
See you at the comic book shop.
This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself? Like you were hiding behind a mask? BetterHelp online therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.